Rob Flader joins us on Sports Byline, longtime executive editor at Sports Illustrated, and among the books that he edited were Sports Illustrated 50, also SI Baseball, the baseball book, and SI, the football book. And Rod and Steve Hoffman have put together the ultimate sports fan's book called The Sports Bucket List, 101 sites every fan has to see before the clock runs out. And in the introduction, Rob, you have written, as we check items off our bucket list, these checks are mementos, and the lists are scrapbooks of all the places we've been and the games we've seen. But the list isn't just historical. It's aspirational, a to-do list, a note to ourselves about our agenda, and impatiently tapping toe, time's a-wasting, what are you waiting for? What was the criteria for something making that list in your book?
Well, I think it was after spending 20 years or more at Sports Illustrated, looking at sports stories, telling them in words and pictures, and going to an awful lot of events, we thought we had something to add to the ongoing conversation among sports fans about, you know, what's the greatest thing you ever saw? And boy, that was an unbelievable game. You've got to go to Lambeau Field in the winter. So it was just, I think it's kind of a list that all sports fans keep to themselves, whether consciously or not, of the great things they've seen and things that you see along the way that you wish you were there for and mean to be there, you know, while you still got a chance.
Was there something that made an event or someplace stand out to you?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. It can be a lot of there are a lot of factors involved. The book is sort of roughly divided into people, great people, individuals or teams that we thought every fan ought to see. Classic places, venues where sports are played, where events are held, and the events themselves, things such as the Olympics, say, or opening day. We're more specific than that in the book, but we wanted to cover a broad range of sports and cover a broad range geographically. So there were a variety of criteria, but the main one is this just has to be a great thing to see if you're a sports fan.
Also, I noticed there is the Super Bowl, the Kentucky Derby, the Olympics. Those are understandable, but you also included the elephant polo events in Nepal. I love that one.
Well, there you go. We really wanted to be to get to some things that were exotic. And I think at Sports Illustrated years ago, we sent somebody to Nepal to do a story about this thing, elephant polo. They play polo on elephants with these long mallets. And we got extraordinary pictures, and it was just an amazing story. And I just filed that someplace in my sports fan's mind, said, this is something I would like to see while I've got a chance. So there are things like that. There are exotic things, faraway things, things I've never seen but would like to see, and a lot of things that I have seen that are just, as you were saying from the introduction, that are in my memory book, that are, you know, among the great things I ever saw as a sports fan, as a sports editor.
I know you were involved with Rick Riley. He had a book like this come out, did he not, about sports around the world?
I worked with Rick for a long time, and he, you know, wrote a column for so long, both at Sports Illustrated. He had the back page forever, and went all over the place. And I didn't model this after what Rick did, but I always, you know, I kind of envied him, and I appreciated his willingness to go anywhere to see great stuff. And I think that a lot of sports fans have that sort of that spirit of, you know, I'm going to get in the car and drive halfway across the country to see Ohio State play Michigan in the Big House or whatever it is. It's a sense of adventure. It's a willingness to go get it, to go see something that's really worth seeing.
You know, another thing, Rob, is I'm going to assume that when we're talking about sporting events or places where sports is played and everything, that we're talking about cultural differences as well. Tell me how that factored into this book and some of the ones, the stories, the places of some of these culturally different items that appear in this book.
Well, I think just within American sports culture, there's such a wide range of things from, you know, from the big three from baseball, football, and basketball, which, you know, every American sports fan loves at least one, if not all of them, to more esoteric things like gymnastics. I mean, some would say horse racing these days, all kinds of things more out on the fringe. So even within our country, within our sports culture, I think there's tremendous diversity. And then when you start branching out, you go to places like much of the world, of course, soccer is the thing, where it's secondary here at best in most places. And so you go to England, most of Europe, South America for sure. It's just hugely important. And if you just keep going, you go to Australia or that part of the world, they're heavily into rugby. They have their own brand of football. It's fascinating to travel around and see what is embraced in different places and how essentially we all connect with it the same way. We're looking for something basic in sports. And no matter what form it takes exactly, you're looking for that excitement, the thrill. You go to a game, you never know what's going to happen. And if you're lucky, you see something you'll never see again and you'll never forget.
I might point out to everybody something that enhances his book is the pictures. And I'm just fascinated by the pictures that I'm looking at right now in the book. Tell me a little bit about the photography decisions.
Well, we went to Steve Hoffman and I, my partner on this, worked together at Sports Illustrated. He was the art director. I was an editor of the magazine for many, many years. And that was how we told stories at SI. When you look at the magazine, I always thought of it for a long time. I grew up with the magazine. I thought of it, well, that's the place where you read great sports stories. And that's certainly true. And that was my end of it primarily at the magazine. I was a storyteller with words and worked with the guys who did that. But half of the geography of the magazine is images. Of course, it's essential to the magazine. That's the illustrated part. And I think, as you're saying, you get a glimpse of things in a picture, in a still picture, even in our age of video and streaming everything and live coverage of just about everything you can imagine. There's something about a still photograph, a great still photograph, that captures the excitement of sports in a way that nothing else can. And so Steve and I are well practiced at that. That was our meat and potatoes for many, many years. And so we looked at, we looked at thousands and thousands of pictures, sort of crafted this list. And then we had a photo editor who gathered up just hundreds and hundreds of pictures. I mean, sometimes for a single item, we'd look at 100 or more pictures till we found the one that was just the thing that we wanted. We wanted a moment that sort of that captured the excitement or the ambience or the thrill of each of these items on the list.
You know, Rob, you and I come from a different generation in covering sports. I mean, you were at Sports Illustrated for such a long time, and I began in broadcasting radio and television another generation ago, but I still love the interview process because I think what it does is it gives people a feel for sports and competition. And I'm just wondering, are you concerned about what technology might do for something like what you've got here and the interview process that I do and everything? Because it just seems like, they said the same thing about the USA Today, you know, because everything was really squeezed down and doesn't give you the full picture of everything. Is this going to go out of vogue, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Well, you know, it's a question that we asked ourselves, and I think everybody who was in the print business and the print journalism business has been asking themselves for decades now. And, you know, when the Internet came along, when electronic media and the availability of all kinds of moving and live images came along, the question that comes up for anybody who's in print or radio is like, well, is this going to put us out of business? Are we going to still be relevant? And somehow through all the years, I think Sports Illustrated has remained relevant, and it's taken many different forms. It's like everything that's survived, you adapt to the times and you add different elements. So, you know, Sports Illustrated is online. The pictures are out there. You look at a version. For instance, Newsweek magazine did a 12-page excerpt of this book in this week's issue. And if you look at the version that they put up online, there are all sorts of video clips of these events linked to each of the items so that you can look at, you get a little glimpse of live action, but you look at the big photographs and you read the words and they all work together. I personally don't think that books or magazines are going to disappear completely. I mean, I think print is here to stay. It's always been with us. It provides you something different from what you get in these other forms. Certainly the world has changed, and the role of moving images and stream live images is ascendant still and dominant even now. But, you know, you go with everything you got, you use all your tools, and you tell stories in the best ways you can using all of those things. So I don't think the printed word or printed pictures are going to disappear completely. I think they can all work together and enhance the experience that the reader or the viewer gets.
I'm looking at your list, and one thing I don't see, and maybe I've just missed it, is do you have anything in here with the 1982 Stanford-Cal game?
No, there is nothing. I know, of course, I know exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, we considered so many things.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that what I'm sure is on lots of sports fans' memory lists of extraordinary things that you see once and you'll never see again and have to be on your all-time list. But it's not an event that somebody could go back and repeat. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And it is, like I was saying, it's one of those things that I think sports fans are always sort of looking for and hoping for. You never know what you're going to get when you go to a game or an event. And with remarkable frequency, you see something you've never seen before. And then every once in a great while, you see something like that game and those events, and you store it in your book, and you never forget it. It didn't belong, I don't think, in our book, because we were trying to do things that people could replicate, experiences that people could go have moving forward in their lives as sports fans. So we tried to, you know, there were a whole lot of limitations on what we put in there, but that was one of the conceptual ones. It was something that a fan could go do now if he or she wanted to do it.
Yeah, and I can understand that. The only reason I brought it up is that I was calling Stanford games and called that game. And the one thing I was always proudest of is the fact that, you know, Joe Starkey did the Cal game, and most people remember that call. But during the course of that play going on, I had seen out of the corner of my eye on the far side of the field the official that was down the line waving his hands above his head, signaling the game was over with. And, of course, they were still lateraling it all over the field, and once he scored the touchdown, about 30,000 people came out on the field, and I knew the officials were not going to change that ruling in any way. But 10 years later, Rob, on the 10th anniversary of that game, the San Francisco Chronicle ran a picture of the play, and up in the right-hand corner, you could see the official signaling end of the game, and I was so proud that I had called it right.
You were on it. You got it right. And they got it wrong, and people remember it for all those other things that happened. It's crazy, and I think, you know, if you watch sports all your life, if it's something that you're enthusiastic about over a long period of time, yeah, everybody has those special things that they saw. They were there when something happened. I mean, I was there when Reggie Jackson hit home runs on four consecutive pitches in the World Series, and things of that sort. They could just, you know, you never expect to see something because you couldn't have imagined it. And there you are, you're sitting in the stands when this happens, and it's just something you'll never forget.
In about 30 seconds, quickly tell me what you want people to take away from this book.
Well, I want them to get the feeling. I want them to get a glimpse of 101 of that sort of things, of the sort of things that make us sports fans, the kind of excitement and thrills and awe of an athletic performance that makes those kinds of permanent memories. I want people to get an idea of things that they could do, places they could go as sports fans where they're likely to get a lifelong memory.
Rob, congratulations on this book. We're going to make it a selection of the month in the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. It deserves that, and I hope people will check it out because it's one of those books you pick up and you really can never put it down because the next page has something else that's interesting, and the photography is just outstanding. So thank you for joining us, Rob.
That's great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Rob Flader, again, longtime executive editor at Sports Illustrated, and along with Steve Hoffman. I want you to check the book out. It's called The Sports Bucket List. We continue on Sports Byline.